Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. They say lightning never strikes twice, but in this story with my guest Noreen Doyle, it does. Noreen's son James and daughter Kate were both diagnosed with cancer as children. James is now 18 after finishing his Leaving Cert, and Kate is now 14, and they both thankfully have so much ahead to look forward to. They were diagnosed 10 years apart, and Noreen saw huge changes in terms of treatment during that time. When James was diagnosed, he took part in a clinical trial. And when Kate was diagnosed, they saw direct benefits as a result of it. Kate's treatment was shorter with fewer side effects. It was a completely different experience. It was no less devastating, and Noreen shares how dark life felt at that time. But now, she and her family have taken so many positives from their experience. They count themselves lucky. And as you listen to this episode, her radiance and perspective will lift your spirits too. Noreen, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Gold Ribbon Conversations. I'm fortunate that the wonderful team at Childhood Cancer Ireland provide me with some notes before the conversations begin, so I can have some insight into the story, into the people I'm talking to. And the thing that stood out for me most was this final little detail on the notes that I was given by the team, which says that Noreen wants to take the positive from this experience. And they count themselves so lucky as a family.
Yeah, that would be extremely true. Because firstly, we've been down this road for so many years as a family with the 2 children. But after all those years now in reflection, when I look back at the potential of what my children could have gone through, my 2 children had the most common type of leukemia, the most curable type of leukemia. So we were actually very fortunate. And then there was 10 years in between the 2 children's diagnosis, and the hope that the clinical trials and what had come from those clinical trials in those 10 years gave us when we were starting down the road the second time, it had a huge impact on us because it made us even more positive that things were going to be okay. So yeah, I never talk to people in the tone of, oh God, have you any idea what we've gone through? No, because I have 4 gorgeous children. I have, granted, 2 of them had a rough enough start, but they're crazy. They're fantastic. They're healthy. And as a family, we've learned an awful lot over the last number of years. Those 2 children who were sick, James and Kate, they have this inbuilt empathy that I really do put it down to them of what they went through. They've this empathy for other children, for, you know, they can pick up when children are struggling. They gravitate towards, you know, the underdogs. They're always bringing home stories of, you know, I met this guy and, you know, he was upset and we chatted. And that they definitely picked that up from what they've gone through. And I think it's a gorgeous thing for them to grow up with and to bring into adult life. So there's huge positives that we take.
Could I ask you just to hold your laptop just a little bit closer, because it's you're sounding a little distant. But that's gorgeous. Tell me about the beginning. Tell me when you, as a mother, as a parent, began to notice something might be wrong.
Okay, well, James's birthday is the 27th of December. So in 2006, on the 27th of December, he turned 2 years of age. He was a gorgeous little blonde bombshell. He was lovely. He was still in nappies. But from that October, and I was pregnant with my daughter, Alison. So I was, Christmas time, I suppose I was about 3 months pregnant. But from October, James had started, you know, looking to be lifted all the time. You know, he was two, he was walking. He was pale. He was taking a lot of naps. Remember, he would get sick just out of nowhere. He would vomit. We were treating him for chest infections. We were treating him for kidney infections. And, you know, I was in and out of the GP all the time. So I had a three-year-old. Adam was three. James was two, and I was pregnant. So hormones were everywhere, right? So people were kind of, you know, saying, ah, you're overreacting. But you know what? There's a mother's instinct. Mm-hmm. And we went through Christmas, and I was very on edge all over that Christmas. And then January came, and on the 26th of January, I said to my husband, I've had this. I am bringing him in. I am not leaving until somebody tells me what's wrong with him. I just had this gut instinct. And in fact, a number of weeks previously, I had rang my GP because I thought I was miscarrying. I had this, I don't know what it was. I had this focus that there was something wrong with one of my children, and I thought it was a baby, but it was James all the time. And I say that to people now, if you're a mother's instinct is phenomenal. So I brought him to the GP, and we were sent straight to Crumlin. And now in A&E in Crumlin, you know, we were there all day. His nose started bleeding. I then only picked up on some bruising on his leg. And eventually we were brought into a cubicle. They, you know, did the blood tests, and, you know, you're oblivious. Cancer never came into my head. And, you know, I'm sitting there with him, and this lovely doctor came in eventually, and she and my husband had arrived, and my sister had come up as well. And she started to talk about leukemia. And I was like, leukemia, like that's a cancer thing, isn't it? And what are you talking about? And that's literally how my first reaction. And that was it. We were told, we were admitted, James and I were admitted straight away. Because he was like he was very sick at that stage, and he was up on blood transfusions for 2 or 3 days, and his treatment was started straight away. So, you know, you're just, oh, it's just, it's incredible. It's shocking. It's just, it changes your world within seconds. We had to send my 3-year-old son. We had to put him on a train down to Cork to my family. And that was heartbreaking because, you know, we work for ourselves. Work still had to keep going. My husband had to keep working. And I was in with James. And, Jesus, I was angry. You know, I was looking at this tiny little blonde bombshell. And his hands were covered in plaster, in bandages, because they had to put the cannulas in. And then with a day or two in, they put the Freddy line into his chest, and that's permanent. And all of these new things were happening. And it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. But you settle down into it and it becomes the norm. And it really did become our new norm. So that was January. I had Alison. I gave birth to Alison early. She was 3 or 4 weeks early because James, we were in hospital. I was in hospital with James. He had a platelets transfusion, his first one. He had a reaction to it. He went into anaphylactic shock. I nearly went in with him, and that brought on my labour. And James was in Crumlin. I was up the road in Coombe, and I had my little girl, and my niece came up from Cork, stayed in the hospital with James. My sister actually came in with me to the birthing of my daughter because my husband had to stay with James. And I got 5 days in the coombe with my daughter. And there was a heat wave that year in April. It was beautiful. We had no visitors. It was just me and her. It was, and I can still remember it. It gives me goosebumps. And she was a little girl because I already had two little boys. And it was bliss because I knew he's been taken care of. My son at home was being taken care of by my niece. And I had my gorgeous doll. And I literally handed her over to a babysitter after that for the next 6 months because I had to go back to James. Because when you have a sick child in the house, unfortunately, they're the priority, be it a new baby or not. So that went on for just over 4 years. So we were in and out. And now it gets much easier as the time goes on. The first year is probably the most difficult. The first 6 months were particularly difficult for us because James was very sick. He had to learn how to walk again. He lost a lot of weight, but he wasn't tubed. I look back on it now and it was awful. It's not easy for any family, but you get through it. And after 4 years, James was done and dusted with all his treatment. You know, he spent another couple of years just going for basic checkups and then that's it. And we as a family, and of course I had another child in the meantime.
I'm like, how is this woman still standing?
I had my fourth child, Kate, in 2009. So we continued on as a family. And so James was diagnosed in 2007 and he was done in 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, you know, between 2011 and 2012, he was pretty much done. And then life went on perfectly until 2017, when Kate was six. She was preparing for her first Holy Communion. Her birthday is June. It was April. She was having her first communion in May. And mid-April, she started napping after school, which isn't really the norm for a six-year-old. She was a very active child. And then one day I was called to the school that she wasn't feeling well and I had to bring her home. And I had to bring her to the office. And she fell asleep in the chair in my office. And my alarm bells went off, like, unbelievably. And I rang my GP, who's a personal friend of mine, and who had gone through the whole episode of James with me. And I said, I'm sorry, but I have this feeling in my stomach again that I haven't had for years. And she literally said, lightning never strikes twice. And I said, but you know what? I'm not taking that risk. I'm going straight to Crumlin. So I brought her up and I just knew in my stomach. I just knew. I brought her up. I went into A&E and I said, lads, I've been here before, right? I'm not staying around all day. I just go and do the blood tests. Now, Professor Owen Smith, who was the head of oncology at the time when James was sick, we remained friends, like he's God, as far as I'm concerned. And I still had Owen's number on my phone and I text him. And now we might only communicate a couple of times a year, you know, but I kept in communications with him. And I text him, I said, Owen, I'm in A&E with my little girl and they're talking, you know, we're going down the oncology scenario here again. And I'm terrified. And he was in the UK and he rang me and he said, put me on to the to whoever was in charge in A&E. And I'm telling you now, when Owen comes on the phone, you jump. They had her bloods done. They came back into me. And I'll never forget the poor doctor that came into me to tell me. She actually went down on her knees on the ground. She was so upset, right? And she said, I just don't know how to tell you this. And I said, just, are we down the same road? Because I didn't want to say it in front of Kate. Mm. And she said, we are. And she was devastated. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just can't believe this. And we used to discuss it in our family as bugs in the blood. That's how we explained it to the children. And Kate was like, Mommy, what's going on? And I said, oh, I said, sweetie, you're not going to believe this, but you've got James's bugs in your blood. And we're going to have to stay in hospital for a while. And we're going to have to give you all kinds of yucky medicines. But guess what? It's all going to be okay. And from that minute forward, that was the attitude we took with Kate. Look, we were knocked sideways. I was so angry with the universe. I used to be I used to be a religious person. I dropped that. I just couldn't go back there. And I'm still very friendly with our local parish priest, and he wanted to come and see her. I said, you can, but you don't bring any rosary beads or anything like that into the room. You'll come as my friend, but please, I can't do the God thing at the minute. So Prof came in. He was flying home that night anyhow, and he came in to me the following morning, and he said, you know, but we've got this. And all I was thinking was what James had gone through, and my little girl was now going to go through this. And it's a bit different with girls, you know, they're losing their hair. She was six. It was a very different, it was going to have a huge impact on her. James was so young. It wasn't as detrimental to him how he looked. For a six-year-old girl, it was going to be a big difference. But then Owen explained to me that in those 10 years, because James was 2007, this is 2017, we had entered James into a clinical trial back then, kind of because it was the right thing to do, not really knowing the ins and outs of what a trial can do. But the results from that clinical trial that we put James into meant that Kate was going to benefit enormously from the learnings of that trial. They had eliminated some of the really toxic drugs that James had to endure by, you know, rejigging the cocktails. He got the best care. She was going to get the best care, but they were improving all the time with these trials. So that was one great thing. But the other great thing was that they had reduced the time. So it took James over 4 years. Kate was done and dusted and out that door in 2 years and 1 month. Like that, the minute I heard that, I was like, oh, for God's sake, sure, this is a walk in the park.
You can do it.
We can do this. And that is exactly, if Kate was here with me today and you said to her, how was it when you were sick? She would say, oh, we had great fun. Because for every milestone that Kate had, every horrible treatment, and there were, you know, I'm not making little of it. It was still awful for her. But she got to see every music artist she wanted. I pulled out every plug for people to come and see her. She loves rugby. You know, she met every rugby star she ever wanted to meet. I went to the ends of the earth to make things positive happen so that those would be her memories of hospital and not the awfulness that she went through. And that actually is how it is for her. She has very funny stories of our time in Crumlin. And the team in Crumlin, you know, they used to love when she'd come in because she, you know, she caused chaos. She has a great personality. So it was a very different journey for us. Now, we had three other children at home at that stage and they were older, but our community rallied around and there was more food dropped into that house. The boys used to love when myself and Kate used to go on our holidays to Crumlin because the neighbours would drop in like really hearty food, because if I was home, it was rushing and, you know, they'd get a slap dish of the dinner or something. But they were so well looked after by all my friends and neighbours. It was just, and that's really important that you have people around you to look after you, you know.
Childhood Cancer Ireland knows that it's often only when treatment is over that parents have a chance to breathe and start to deal with what they've been through. You may leave the experience feeling stuck in high alert mode and disconnected from your old life and relationships. Our new parent workshops will offer some practical strategies to help you find you again. There are two more workshops taking place between now and November, with refreshments and lunch provided, and we can also provide financial assistance with travel costs. To find out more about our free workshops, visit childhoodcancer.ie or find the link in our show notes. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
How was it for James? Because he was now old enough to witness the bugs in the blood in his sister. You spoke of how he was so little and so young when it was happening to him, so oblivious. But as a sibling, to now see what your sister is going through, did it impact him and his emotional recovery?
That's a really good question. So at the time, he didn't really want to know. And I could safely say to you that James still hasn't come to terms with what he had to go through as a child. And I think that takes time. Everyone is different. Kate, they're very different. James is very private. And he puts up a massive wall to protect himself. And that wall, he, as far as he's concerned, he doesn't remember anything. He has zero memories, even though he was 6 or 7. So he has to have some memories. So he disassociated himself. So it didn't, as far as we were concerned, it didn't have an impact on him. But you and I both know that that's not the way things work. So I think that's still, I think that's still a story in progress for James. I think in time, when he's ready, he'll address that as an adult, probably. Whereas with Kate, Kate will talk about it till the cows come home, you know. I was unwell there a while back and I was moaning. Actually, I had to get a tooth removed and I was feeling really sorry for myself. Now, this is sound awful, but I'm trying to explain how it is for her because she is so open about it. I said, oh, my mouth is really sore. And she said, I don't know what you're complaining about. I have cancer. And she'll say that in not in a bold way, but in a get over yourself. Life, you know, I'm better. And, you know, it's incredible her resilience. And I think that'll stand to her as she gets older. I suppose as a family, we do have a huge appreciation for don't sweat the trivial things. You know, and I, like I say it, I don't know how many times a week, you know, at the flick of a switch, your life can change. And when I find myself complaining about really stupid things that I think at the time are, oh my God, I can't find that pair of shoes in a size 7. Like, get a grip. You know, realistically, there are a lot worse things out there that can happen to us.
Was that a process to get to, though? Because I'm thinking of when you said how lightning doesn't strike twice and feeling that anger, like how unjust it was to have it once, but to go through it a second time. Has it left any impact on you that you're constantly waiting for the next thing to come around the corner?
Absolutely. So I often say to, you know, I would have communications from time to time with people who are new to this road, you know, new diagnosis or something, or somebody might ring and say, oh, look, my friend, her child has just been diagnosed. Will you talk to them or whatever? And it's always the mum, and I don't mean to make this in a bad way, but like, I suppose the mums are the carers, the dads have to do the work. And 9 times out of 10, it is kind of mum that's looking after. And mums have this resilience. And you, and in the moment, you just knuckle down, you do everything that needs to be done, and you do not think about yourself. But when it all finishes and the dust settles, that's when I fell apart. So after James was finished with his treatment and everything, and everyone was exhilarated, and I then sat down, and it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. Jesus, that's been the most awful 4 years of my life. How did we do that? How did we do that? So I went for therapy. I went and I spoke. I got it out of my system, and I had to learn. So I'm a natural worrier. So this really wasn't the greatest thing to happen in my life. And I used to have this ring of worry permanently in my head. So let's say we'd be left out of hospital, I'd immediately be packing the bag for the next time. You know, I'd be preempting the negative permanently. Preempting the next worst thing that's going to come over the horizon. And I had to learn to stop that, because that's no way to live a life. And it's no way to let your children see you living your life. So I had to figure out, and I had to train myself into stopping that ring of worry. And that had an enormous effect on me when Kate got sick, because immediately I triggered. And immediately I went, hang on a minute. We're not going back down this rabbit hole. You're no good to anyone if you're going to fall apart. So what it does, for me, it has given me massive life skills. Mm-hmm. It has taught me massive life skills. I'm actually a great person in a panicky situation. Mm-hmm. Now, I I completely calm down. I take control. I tell people, you know, you need to do that. You need, and I it's kind of like an out of body experience, but it, that's what it's taught me. And, you know, I think that's invaluable. And I think that's kind of graduated into my children as well. I think they have learned that life isn't always going to be easy, but equipped with the right people, you know, no matter what the situation is, the right advice, the right backup, the right team around you, this too will pass. So, you know, it's they've learned a lot.
Is it something that you have to constantly work on for yourself? Can you feel, let's just say there's a bruise, let's just say there's a temperature and it's a normal thing, let's just say it was the arrival of the pandemic, do you feel as though you can revisit what you learned and quickly rectify the situation again?
Yes, I have to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I would be a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
So you have to make the choice. You make the choice of controlling these negative thoughts or letting them control you. Like Kate now, she plays rugby, right? It's horrendous. Her legs are permanently covered in bruises. And I actually said it to her not that long ago. I was like, you know, if this was me, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I'd be looking at you going, oh, sweet divine God, we need to go to hospital. Mm-hmm. But now I'm saying no, because you can't live your life like that, because you just can't, because then it controls you and then you're no use to anybody. And it's important for me that I don't instill that fear in the children going forward, because then they'll never do anything. And I need them to get out there and live their lives to the fullest. So you have to make the choice. I make the choice to move on, and that's just the way it is. But yes, the thought always comes into my head. Always comes into my head.
And was it just talk therapy that you, or what are the things that you have practiced to get that place? Because I feel like even if you haven't gone on the journey that you have had, what you've just spoken about is something that I would fully want to subscribe to, because I think it's a wonderful way of approaching life.
Yeah, so I'm a real visual person. So I do a lot of visualization. So I studied craniosacral therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, for a number of years. And I used to bring the children to it. And the person that I studied under in Nace, Ger Soares, an amazing man. And whilst it's quite holistic, it really resonated with me, because it's not just physical. It combines the physical and the psychological together. And I discovered that this sounds a little bit crazy, but actually it's really true. When I got really stressed, my hip started to hurt me. Mm-hmm. And my hip used to, and I, you know, I'd let it build and I'd let it build and I'd let it build. And this would be work, like we run our own business, you know, and, you know, with 4 kids, the house is mad. There's a lot of life going on. And I, as I said, I'm an internal worrier. So the stress would build and build and build, build. My hip would go and I wouldn't be able to walk. And I'd go to Ger, and then he started me on the visualization. So the visualization would be, where is my stress? It was always in my stomach. What does it look like? How does it feel? You know, can I touch it? And it really worked for me. So when my mind starts to worry about, could that child be sick? What I do is I visualize literally in my head, holding that thought, telling that thought, you know, this is your mind playing tricks on you. That child is not sick. The realization of this is that child is a head cold, and just let it go. And practicing that all the time, even lying in bed at night, you know, night can sometimes be the worst time to worry about stuff. And I have those chats with myself and I talk myself out. And that becomes a great habit. And the more I practice it, the less I stress. And the more realistic my thoughts become.
How different is that to the intuition that you spoke of at the beginning? When you feel that mother's intuition, is that something that even with that practice wouldn't go away?
Oh yeah, no, that's a completely different ballgame. Mm. It's like you feel it in your gut. And I remember Professor Smith saying to his doctor's team, you never, ever ignore the mother's gut. If the mother said there's something wrong with the child, there is something wrong with the child. It's just this gut instinct that I know. And because I've had it twice, I trust it 100%. So there's a very big difference for me between that gut instinct and the negative thoughts. You know, but as a mother, you just have this incredible connection. You know this with your children. You're so bonded with them. And like, I'm a glutton to my children, you know. my husband tells me I'm so... every mother worries about their kids, but like my children are my absolute world. They're my world. And we're very lucky. We have a very open house. Their pals are always in. My house is never tidy. There's teenagers every corner of my house. There's noise, there's music, there's food. I love it because it's life. And it's how I was reared as well. My house was, our front door was always open to people. And there is nothing more rewarding, I think, as a parent than the laughter of your children with their pals and stuff in the house and the freedom they have to talk about everything and anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing as well that our journey has allowed us to learn. We'll sit around the dinner table on Sunday and we'll talk. I'll question them about everything. I'll ask them about everything. There is nothing that's off the table to talk about in our house. And it means that their pals will come and talk to us about stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, you know.
It's lifted the lid. You've gone through the worst. So whatever you tell me around this table can't be any worse than what the doctors have told you.
Exactly. Listen, we've had awful stuff in this house. You can't shock me with anything you're going to tell me, but maybe I can help you figure it out. Or maybe you can give me a laugh and I can have a laugh with you. But, you know, talk. I'm, as you can tell, I am a huge believer in never bottling things up. If you have a worry, talk it out. The kids especially, and especially in this day and age, they're under so much pressure with everything, so much peer pressure, social media pressure, and they're not equipped to deal with this. Now, I'm not either because I was, you know, I come from a completely different generation. But if we can talk about it, we can, you know, figure out who can help us or what we need to do or, you know, so we have a very open table at our house, which I think is invaluable.
I don't think I'll forget when you spoke of how you felt when you were pregnant, this kind of grief come over you, this feeling, this really intense feeling, and just assuming it was to do with
the baby. Yeah. I can actually tell you.
Fascinating.
I can tell you exactly where I was. Yeah. I was in Newbridge. I'm living there. I was in Newbridge in the Whitewater Shopping Centre. I was driving through the car park and I suddenly, I had this feeling there was something wrong with the baby. I was like, I rang my GP and she sent me straight to the Coombe, and just Tom Darcy was my gynae. And, you know, he did the scan. He said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your baby. You are perfect. But I just had this ping. And from then until James was diagnosed, I had this ping. And it was like this shadow. And as soon as he was diagnosed, I thought I was concentrating on the wrong child. This was going on. I didn't realize it. I just assumed it was this baby. And I firmly believe that my intuition was trying to tell me this. But because I had no experience, you know, I stuck with it. And eventually, anyhow, that's what happened.
Did that feeling change once you got the news? Once you saw the reality?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. It was like, okay, So there was something wrong, concentrating on the wrong child. Okay. And then the next chapter starts.
Yeah. But instead of it being a shadow, it almost walks beside you now. Like that you're on this path now together.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose, you know, it's frightening. It's terrifying. Cancer at any stage is awful. Cancer in a child is, it's just awful. Mm-hmm. It is awful. And, but I suppose in a way we were ignorant of what was to come. And that's a great, that was a good thing, you know, because we had no idea what he was going to have to go through. So it was really just day by day. And some days it was hour by hour. So, you know, you just, you're in it. You've no choice. You just go forward.
And the decision to have him take part in that trial and it have such an impact on your daughter's experience, which is so rare because thankfully lightning doesn't often strike twice. But in our first episode of this season, I was talking to Professor Walter Kulch and to Alan Pearson, who also placed his daughter on various trials, and the feeling that everyone part of this system has put a fingerprint mm-hmm. on the future and on the future success when it comes to outcomes, but also on improving the treatment plans, reducing the severity of side effects, reducing the lifelong impact of the treatments.
Yep.
And that in it, you don't often get an insight into what that will mean mm-hmm. for future patients, because you step away from the world, from that cancer community. But when you were brought back in with your daughter, you actually witnessed the mm-hmm. benefits.
Yeah.
Witnessed the change.
Like when we signed James up in 2007, you know, we were a bit oblivious really to what impact it was going to have. All I was interested in was is he going to get the best care? He's going to get the best care. You know, if he, you know, going into this trial, does it make any difference if he gets different, you know, content? No, he's still getting the best care. What will this mean? It'll mean that maybe in the future, other children will benefit. Oh, I'll sign up for that. It was the right thing to do, morally. Never for a second did I ever think. And you know what? I don't think we even thought about the trial after that. Mm-hmm. You know, you get your sheets every month about listing all the drugs, all the procedures. You don't really think about it being a trial after that because your child is being looked after. Mm-hmm. And it never dawned on me that first day when Kate was diagnosed about the trial. It never dawned on me. All I was thinking was, oh, here we go. Over 4 years, those awful injections, you know, the all the different procedures that James had to go through. I was like, oh, this, looking at that gorgeous 6-year-old thinking, Jesus, we have to put her through all of this. Mm. And like James used to have to get a lumbar puncture done every 4 weeks. Like even the idea of that used to just kill me. Mm. And the following morning, when Prof came in, you know, and he could see I was broken. I really was broken. It's the only word I could put on it. And he said, look, we've got this. You know, we're going to start her in a couple of days. They gave us a couple of days to go home before they started Kate. And he said, but you know, Noreen, James's trial finished. And they have to, you know, the results, and it's now had an impact on what's going to happen with Kate. And I was like, what? This is just phenomenal. It was almost like he had taken away the awfulness of what was going to happen. You know, he went through the drugs that were eliminated, and then he gave me the time span, and I was like, this is incredible. Mm. It really had that an effect on me. I thought, happy days.
And that even was a number of years ago. So
yeah,
we can hope and assume that.
Yep.
Each single year, it's improving that just any amount of knowledge.
Absolutely. And like the prognosis went from the high 80% for James to be great, to be perfect afterwards, to the high 90s for Kate. So you know, you go in and you're told, okay, after a few, there's a 90% chance, 90% after 2 years of treatment, your daughter is going to be perfect. Like, that's incredible. That is, it's doable. It's so doable. And again, I want to stress, I'm not making light of what she went through, but we do have something to compare it to. And the direct comparison was just incredible for us.
It's an incredible experience to have to go through twice and to come out of it feeling positive. It really is.
Yeah. You know,
to come out of it feeling positive and to take those life lessons as a positive, to take what you now witness and appreciate and hold, and the way that you have been able to learn those life skills, apply those life skills. For me, I have no idea how I would live it, but I think I would probably still be broken, as you had said in that room that day.
I can tell you that I can sit here and talk to you about this positively now.
Yeah.
And I have been able to do that for a period of time. But believe you me, at nighttime sitting in that room in Crumlin with Kate, when she's up on the drip or, you know, going through being sick or whatever, those were horrible nights. And I would process the anger, the self-pity, because there was self-pity. I was like, I can't believe I'm going through this again. The fear, anxiety at nighttime was awful. But I knew that I had to process that at the time, because these things come back and bite you in the ass if you don't. So you have to allow yourself to wallow. And I wallowed at nighttime when she was asleep in the bed, and I was on a little bed beside her on the ground. And then in the morning, you would pick yourself up, brush yourself off, and you were back to being positive mummy, because that's what we do. And I suppose over the year afterwards, I definitely needed time to gather myself. But it was my second time round, so I was able to recover emotionally quicker this time, because I knew it was going to be okay. And it is easier for me to sit back and say, oh, you know, we've taken all the positives, but we have taken all the positives, but there, it's a process.
Can I ask, how did their dad process it? Because I think it's so important to include that in the conversation. As you said, it is the mother often who's responsible for those caring roles, but our dads love their children too.
And dad, John and Kate are like two peas in a pod. Mm-hmm. He was destroyed when he heard his little girl was sick. It was bad enough when James was sick, but we had just started up. We had just invested in a new building when James got sick. It was, timing was appalling. I had to take a year out of work. So he literally had to throw himself into two people's work, my work and his work. So it was a whirlwind for him when James was sick. But when Kate got sick, you know, It was really, really, really difficult for him. Like to this day, the two of them, they go everywhere together. You know, she plays rugby. He loves the fact that she does. I tease him that we have two sons, but it's his daughter is able to play rugby. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult on a dad, because dads, you know, they're strong and they're, you know, they're the breadwinners and they're this and they're that. But it's very hard on them. Plus, I suppose when kiddies are sick, they kind of graduate towards the mum. But look, like everything else, he came out of it. He got through it. They're as thick as thieves. It definitely made them even tighter than they already were. But it's not easy on anyone.
How are James and Kate now?
They are fantastic. So James has just accepted a place in Third Level College. He did his leaving cert this year. He learned how to drive. He bought his own car. He's just back from electric picnic. He is a very social individual. He's loving life. He is living his best teenage life at the minute. That's all I can tell you. He's loving life. He really is. He has an amazing network of friends. He's great. He's great. And he and I have a very, very special bond. We be very, very close. James and I are very close. Kate is wild as a 14-year-old. She's gone into junior cert. She loves fake eyelashes, tan boys. She's boy mad. She plays hockey, football, rugby. She runs. She's very sporty. She has an enormous personality. She's great fun. She's very bold. Typical 14-year-old. She couldn't tidy her room to save your life. She would live in a pigsty, actually. But, you know, they're just oozing life. It's the only word I can put on it. They are oozing life.
I imagine if you are a parent who has a young child in cancer treatment right now, visualization of what you have just described is medicine.
Yeah.
To hold that thought, to hold that vision for how your children are living their lives now, absolutely, after surviving what they have survived, that to me is the visualization that I would hold. And I would believe that that is what is on the other side of this pain and fear and anxiety and treatment and everything that's coming down the road.
Absolutely. And as the trials go on more and more, they are focusing more. I know that the trial we put Kate into is focusing on the quality of life, the quality of life of the child during their treatment, and incorporate that into the quality of the family as well, the quality of life of the family, because it impacts everybody. It's as important that the child's, you never want, I would never let cancer rob my children of their child years. So that's why we were so adamant that we would not let Kate miss out on things, even though she'd be stuck in hospital. And that had an impact on her. And it's that positivity that you have to pass on to them, because children soak it up and it has an impact on how they heal. It has an impact on how they cope. So permanently saying, you're working towards the better end, you're working, and there will be hiccups and there will be, you know, downs, and that's just inevitable. But you can't give in to them. You have hope has such healing power, in my opinion. And wherever you can give hope, and that's why the trials are just incredible as far as I'm concerned. They give that amazing hope to people that we're perfecting all the time, we're working, we're making it better all the time. And I think it's so important that positivity and the hope is shown to the parents from the team, and then from the parents onto the child. And it does, in my experience, it does have an impact.
It's incredible. It's an incredible story. You are an incredibly positive person. I think if there's a coaching role or anything like that where you could speak and share these life lessons with us, I want to hear more from you on this, because your perspective on life and your children are so, so fortunate to have you.
Thank you.
Because of how you think and of how you have rallied them through this. Mm-hmm. You've rallied me in 1 hour this morning, let me tell you. Never mind a lifetime of them being mothered by you. It's really incredible. I want to finish as we've started. You are taking the positives from this.
Totally.
And that, if you are in it, might be hard to hear, but I hope if you hear it in time, that they also can look back and feel like there are positives to be taken. Not in the moment. In the moment, you can be as angry and as broken as you need to be. But in time, that you can look back and take something from it that will hopefully better your days ahead. thank you for speaking to us on the podcast. Thank you. It really was an absolute pleasure to have your company this morning.
Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.